All right. Hello. Welcome back to, whatever it is that you want to call us, because all I do is talk and you listen. So, I mentioned last episode, I in passing mentioned Stephen Avery. So once I did that, I was like, I need to look this up. I need to look more into this. Like most people, I did watch Making a Murderer. And I remember at the conclusion of that, I was like, Stephen Avery is innocent. So I was definitely intrigued to see the other side of that, because I know a lot of people don't think he is innocent. With that being said, I am going to spend a little bit more time on this case of Stephen Avery, and I'm actually going to break it into two episodes. So let's go ahead and get started. And, you know, by the way, with saying how controversial this case is at this point, and I haven't finished my research, but at this point, I have no idea whether or not Stephen Avery murdered Teresa Halbach. I couldn't tell you. And I don't think I'll ever have the answer to that. And the reason why I'm going to be spending so much time on this one is because I really wanted to learn for myself and also give you guys more evidence than you probably have heard about on these documentaries, especially Making a Murderer. I'm not going to pick a side. I'm not going to favor arguments for a side. How this is actually going to go, what I have planned for this week's episode is I'm going to give you, you know, an overview of Stephen Avery, his life before the trial, kind of a generic timeline of what happened, and then I'm going to get into obvious facts of the case, and then I'm going to talk about the defense, their arguments about, or their closing argument of, you know, really the facts that they present on why Stephen Avery is guilty. I did spend hours on this. There's a great website, I think it's called the Stephen Avery Case, I would have to look it up again, that literally gives you the transcripts from every single day, and I think it was 2 weeks of trials, and there's like 300 pages, if, you know, per transcript. It's crazy. All right, so without further ado, here's our part one of Stephen Avery and the murder of Teresa Halbach. So Stephen Avery was born July 1962 in Manitowoc County, Wisconsin. He was born to Alan and Dolores Avery, and his family operated a salvage yard. They were portrayed kind of as very well-known, you know, small-towny, whatever, but not necessarily well-liked by everyone. Stephen had three siblings, Chuck, Earl, and Barbara. And his mom did say that Stephen went to a school that taught students essentially with special needs. He was reported to have struggled through school. And once, you know, he was done with school, whatever, I think he was 18, he got married to Lori. He was 20 years old, I'm sorry, when he got married to Lori Matheson. I'm not sure if her name, and I'm not very good at it, so. In July of 1982, they were married. They ended up having four kids, Rachel, Jenny, Stephen, and Will. I guess Stephen and Will were actually twins, too. So, when Stephen was 18, so this was in 1981, he was convicted of robbing a bar, So he was found guilty and sentenced to 2 years in jail. He only ended up serving 10 months of that time. He was released on probation. The next year, Stephen was found guilty of animal cruelty following an incident with his cat being torched in a bonfire. They're going to go into a little bit of details about this, but that's not necessary. He spent less than a year incarcerated for that crime. A couple of years later, so this is 1985, he was accused of ramming into or hitting his cousin's car, I believe it was, with his own car, and then pointing a gun in her face while trying to force her into his own car. He was again found guilty of these charges and was sentenced to 6 years. During that same year of accusal with this whole incident with his cousin, Penny Bernstein was jogging on the beach when she was attacked and sexually assaulted. She was given a photo lineup and picked Stephen Avery out as the attacker. They also did a live lineup, and she again picked Stephen Avery out as the attacker. A forensic examiner testified that a hair recovered from Stephen's shirt was consistent with Penny's hair. However, forensics on hair was not exact nor fully developed. But this was never mentioned during the testimony from the forensic examiner or anybody. You know, our understanding, our technology, it wasn't advanced enough to really determine. You know, it wasn't developed fully to the extent that it is today to say that this hair was or wasn't Penny's. Stephen, during trial, presented 16 witnesses to his own alibi for where he was during the time of this crime. He was even seen on a video recording at a hardware store. He's seen on this recording to be where he said he was with his family at the store. However, the jury deliberated for only 4 hours and then convicted him. He was sentenced to 32 years in prison. He was denied appeals in 1987 and 1996. However, in 1995, two, I don't want to say major breakthroughs, but two significant things happened. The first thing was that a petition for DNA testing was granted. So they were able to prove that, scrapings that were previously taken from under Penny's fingernails contained the DNA of an unknown person that was not Stephen Avery. The second thing that happened was an inmate in Brown County admitted to the crime, the sexual assault of Penny, and he said that he knew someone else was in jail for it. So the Brown County police detective called Manitowoc County to share this information. And the sheriff at the time, Kokorek, I believe, probably not how you pronounce it, he was, he said that, we already have the right guy, so don't concern yourself with it. And that was basically it for that. He didn't look into it. He didn't care that somebody had confessed to this crime. He was content with having Stephen Avery wrongfully accused of this crime and put behind bars. There's a whole kind of conspiracy behind this whole thing where Manitowoc County didn't like the Averys. Stephen's cousin that he hit her car was actually married to somebody involved in Manitowoc County Department of, whatever, cops. I don't know. So it was kind of like a whole conspiracy theory that, they didn't care that it wasn't Stephen. They were going to put him in jail anyways. So in 2002, after, advancements had been made with DNA testing, they tested hair that was found on Penny during that sexual assault. These hairs came back linked to Gregory Allen. Gregory Allen was, at the time, in 2002, serving a 60-year sentence for none other than sexual assault. That happened after the attack on Penny. Gregory had a history of, you guessed it, sexual assault, and was under surveillance. I don't know how. I'm sorry. I give up. In 1985, but he was never considered a suspect and wasn't even put in the lineup that was shown to Penny. Which, if you look up Gregory Allen and Stephen Avery at the time, they do actually look alike. And so definitely no victim blaming here for Penny, because she went with a reasonable choice when not even given the choice of Gregory Allen. So anyways, he was never considered a suspect, wasn't in the lineup. So in 2003, Stephen Avery was found innocent and released. While he was in prison, him and his wife, what was her name? Lori, did get a divorce, and essentially she didn't allow him to see the children. He was accused of being physically and emotionally abusive, had anger issues, made threats, you know, whatever it is. But they were no longer really a part of each other's lives. Once he was released in 2003, he filed a lawsuit against Manitowoc County and Sheriff. Weird name, Kokrick. He was asking for $36 million. And I mean, there's no amount of money that you can give somebody to give back, you know, their life that you've taken from them. Let's see, he was sentenced, what, in 85 and wasn't released until 2003. So that's what, 18 years of his life, he was put behind bars for a crime that he did not commit. So maybe $36 million seems like an astronomical amount of money, but can you really put a price on some taking, you know, that much time away from somebody's life? And I know definitely you can argue the fact that he was a criminal, he was a bad person to begin with, whatever it is. But if we're not looking at it per se from, you know, Stephen Avery, but just anybody taking away that much time of somebody's life for something that they didn't commit, for a crime that they didn't commit, I just couldn't imagine that. Well, anyways, the suit was settled for $400,000 in 2006. So now we kind of get into the real, you know, real purpose of this and, you know, the real controversy surrounding Stephen Avery, and that's the murder of Teresa Halbach. So Teresa was one of five siblings. She grew up in a small town in Calumet County, Wisconsin. She was described as nice and caring. She enjoyed photography and even coached her younger sister's volleyball team. She disappeared on October 31st, 2005. So I do have a basic timeline of events for kind of that day and the days surrounding. That doesn't necessarily prove or disprove anybody's guilt or anything. It's just a basic timeline because this case gets pretty crazy. So, all right, so on October 5th, I'm sorry, I don't know why I can't get the dates correct, why I keep saying things that just aren't right. On October 35th, Stephen Avery calls Auto Trader, and this is, what, 8 o'clock in the morning, and requests that Teresa photographs a vehicle for Barb Janda. He leaves Barb's number for Teresa. And which later I learned the importance really of this part of the timeline is that Stephen Avery called Auto Trader to request for Teresa, saying and then gave the name of Barb and the phone number so that Teresa wouldn't know that it was him calling. Because she's actually done photographs and stuff for Steven before, and it's reported that she had mentioned that she didn't want to go back over to Steven Avery's property after, you know, 5 or 6 times being over there because he creeped her out or whatever. So, and I didn't learn this until after I looked at the timeline. So he calls, says, hey, you know, have Teresa call this number, Barb, because I need this car photographed. So a little bit before 11 o'clock, Teresa calls back the number for Barb that Stephen Avery left and, you know, says that she can come over and photograph the van after 2 p.m. Stephen Avery, at around 2:30, calls Teresa's phone twice, but he uses *67 to block his number. And again, a little after that, Auto Trader calls Teresa, and then she says that she's on her way to the Avery residence. So, the timeline here, Stephen Avery says, from 2 to 2:30, Teresa arrived, photographed the van. She gave him the newest edition of, or issue of, Auto Trader magazine. And then she left. He went to go put the Auto Trader magazine on his desk inside his trailer, comes back and he sees Teresa's car pulling out of the lot, whatever. He originally says that he pays her outside in the vehicle, whatever. We'll get into that a little bit more. And then he also stated that Bobby Dassey, which I think Bobby is his, yeah, Bobby's his nephew. His truck was outside when he went inside. And then he goes back inside to talk to his mom. He says, I think 10 minutes he's in there. And then he comes back out. And so Teresa's already gone. And now Bobby Dassey's gone. Bobby Dassey testified saying that from 2:30 to 3 o'clock, he saw Teresa photographing the car and then walked towards Steven's trailer. He then says that he left, and then he saw Teresa's vehicle still there, but not Teresa. So around 3:10, Scott, and I'm going to butcher his name, Tadick, maybe, and Bobby Dassey passed each other on the road, both said that they were going hunting. Around 3:30, I think the timeline said 3:30 to 4:40, which makes no sense to me because that's an hour and 10-minute window. The school bus driver drops off Brendan Dassey and Blaine Dassey, Bobby's brothers, and also the nephews of Stephen Avery. I could have read it wrong. It could have been 3:30 to 3:40. I don't know. So then at about 4:30, Avery calls Teresa without blocking his number, stating that he wanted, he's saying that, yeah, I called her again because I wanted her to photograph another car that I had. 5:30-ish, Stephen Avery calls his fiance, who is in prison. Her name was Jody Stakowski. I don't know. Sorry, Jody. Anyways, they talk on the phone for 15 minutes. The conversation is recorded. I don't think anything incriminating was said during that time. Brendan Dassey says about from the time from 5 to 6, his mother came home from work and then leaves again. Blaine also leaves going trick-or-treating. Around 7 o'clock, Stephen Avery calls Brendan Dassey and invites him to a bonfire, which I read in an article that Stephen Avery said that originally there was no bonfire that night. He didn't use his fire pit, his burn bucket barrels, anything like that. And then at 9 o'clock, Avery says he went to get ready for bed. He didn't actually, go to sleep until 10:30. He says that he was inside, you know, essentially getting ready for bed and watching porno for an hour and a half. But at 11 p.m., Kayla Dassey, which I believe is also his, not his nephew, but his niece, but I think she's the sister of Brendan and Blaine and Bobby. She says that at 11 p.m. she sees her Uncle Steven outside stoking the fire in the fire pit. And that's all for the timeline for October 31st. So October 3rd, Teresa Halbach is reported missing by her mother. And this is around 4 p.m. that day. At 5 p.m., Calumet County calls Manitowoc County and asks for assistance in the case of, you know, this missing persons case. The next day, they start to search for Teresa. Helicopters began flying over Stephen Avery's residence, which now would be a great time to mention that he lives, the Avery residence isn't just like Stephen's trailer or the salvage yard. They have like a really large section of land with multiple different housing units on it, where the Dassies live, where Avery lives, where his parents live, where the salvage yard is, all this stuff. So it's actually a very large residence. So helicopters begin to fly over the Avery residence, including, you know, the salvage yard and stuff. And they're also flying over areas of road that Teresa could have traveled on her way back home to Calumet County. this day, Lieutenant Link visits Stephen Avery's trailer, where Avery now said that Teresa came into so that he could pay her for the photos. Blaine says that Brendan and Chuck, they interview Blaine Dassey, and Blaine says that Brendan, his brother, and Chuck, his uncle, Stephen Avery's brother, left for, like, their family cabin in Crivitz, I believe it is, and I'm assuming that's in Wisconsin as well. So the next day, November 5th, Stephen says that his mom, Dolores, and him also leave for the cabin. I'm sorry what it is. I can't talk. I don't know what it is. Anyways, around 10 a.m., a volunteer, I believe her name was Pam, I could be wrong, finds Teresa's vehicle in the salvage yard belonging to the Averys, and they begin searching Avery's trailer that day. November 6th, officers find shell casings in the garage and blood that is later found not to match Teresa. Okay, so there's a very basic timeline of events that happen. Now I'm going to get into more of the nitty-gritty of this case. And so for time's sake, this episode, I'm going to cover, you know, the basic facts, really, that point towards Stephen Avery being guilty. And then I actually have information on what the state's closing argument was about, you know, why Stephen Avery is guilty of the murder of Teresa Halbach. So, things basically, you know, everybody knows, would include the fact that remains of Teresa were found in Avery's fire pit. DNA evidence ties the bullet casing found in the garage to Teresa. Avery is also the last known person to see Teresa alive. Obviously, her car was found on their lot, and it did have blood in it. And Brendan Dassey, his nephew, confesses that he helped his uncle murder Teresa. And so, if you've seen Making a Murderer, it's well made to kind of make the states out to be the bad guy in this situation. And no doubt about it, I think there was definitely some corrupt things going on within Manitowoc County. But there are a lot of things that Making a Murderer left out in order to paint a better picture of Stephen Avery. There's even splicing done to audio that, you know, never happened. You know, they made it look how they wanted it to look. So anyways, things that were left out of Making a Murder was that, you know, the bullet not only could be linked to Teresa with DNA, but it was linked back to Stephen Avery's gun. Restraints were also found in Avery's trailer. These restraints were described by Brendan Dassey. However, Stephen admits to buying these to use with his girlfriend, but they never mention any of this. They also don't mention the fact that Stephen Avery's sweat was found on Teresa's keys. Those were that were later found in his trailer. And he claims to have never handled them or to have even seen them. They never mention that he personally requested for Teresa to come and take those pictures. And they never mentioned that he used Barbara's name to hide the fact that it was him calling. Blood that matched Stephen Avery was found in a vehicle, which there's speculation that, you know, this was planted, blah, blah, blah. We'll get into that later. But there was also sweat found on the hood latch, which, I mean, this just is absurd to think that somebody could physically plant sweat as evidence. Like, how do you plant sweat as evidence? Okay, but moving on. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to argue. I'm just being the devil's advocate. You know, like, we're just going to keep going. So Teresa's belongings were found in a burn barrel near Stephen Avery's trailer. And also, they mentioned in the documentary that there was a hole in the blood vial, and, they don't explain that a nurse made a sworn testimony that she is the one that put that hole into the vial when she drew the blood from Stephen Avery. So also, Brendan Dassey admits the crime with his mother over the phone. I almost want to say that this was in the documentary, though. I remember something about him talking with his mom on the phone. But, you know, moving on. So, Brendan Dassey also confessed to the detectives. And I did copy and paste this. He says that they had sex with Teresa on the bed. Then they carried her out to the garage where they cut her throat. And that's where Stephen shot her 5 times with the .22 Brendan said he pulled from above his head. Then they threw her in the fire. She begged for her life through the entire ordeal. Brendan even cut off some of her hair. Then they cleaned up with bleach and burned all the clothes in the bonfire. Okay. And I'm just like, this whole time, this poor, poor girl. You know, like, she obviously didn't deserve this no matter what happened to her. Like, it's not fair for her. All right, so this next portion I took directly from the transcripts from the court case. So this was what the state's closing argument included. And I mean, this is a very, very, very brief synopsis of what the state said. Like I said, you know, there's 300 plus pages in each transcript of each day. It's intense. So, obviously, Teresa Halbach's RAV4 was discovered on the Avery residence. You know, and that's the last place that she was seen alive. The state mentioned, you know, that as soon as these people found the RAV4, they took photos. They noted that all the doors were locked. There were no license plates on the vehicle. You know, it was being hidden, essentially. Like, whoever put it there went through the effort to take the license plates off the car, to lock it, whatever it is, you know. And they also testified that they never took their eyes off of that vehicle until law enforcement arrived. It was hidden it wasn't just like out in the open. I mean, there, I think they said there was like 4,000 cars on this lot or something. I could be making up that number. I think it was 4,000. Anyways, the vehicle was hidden and Avery was going to eventually crunch the car because it was found kind of where the cars get, crunched, smashed, whatever. Another thing, incriminating piece of evidence that the state used was that a cadaver dog hit on Teresa's RAV, meaning at one point there was a dead body in there, or there still was, which if you know anything about this case, the body wasn't in the RAV4 anymore. Also, they said that the car could not have been parked where it was without knowledge and being familiar with the Avery property. Essentially, it could only be driven in from one way. Avery's blood is also found in 6 different areas of Teresa's vehicle, and then his sweat again in one, and then on the lanyard for the keys. The burn barrel found at Stephen Avery's trailer included remnants of her camera, her cell phone, and her PDA. Blaine Dassey, Stephen's nephew, reports seeing Stephen put a white plastic bag full of things into that burn barrel. And this was after the time that, Teresa was supposed to be at the house. They also found a bullet matching Stephen Avery's .22 with Teresa's DNA on it. And Teresa did have 2 gunshot wounds to her head. Teresa had taken pictures for Stephen before. Oh, I already mentioned this. He asked for Teresa, yada, yada, yada. Blaine reports also seeing a huge fire behind Stephen's trailer at 11 p.m. the night of her disappearance. So that was October 31st. And then, of course, we have the infamous key that was found in his bedroom with his DNA on it. So, I mean, and there's still more that the state said. It's just, honestly, this case is so overwhelming. And looking at the court transcriptions, I could not read all of that. It would be impossible. So I just took the closing argument and did what I could with it. Again, still so much more information. I know there was stuff about slippers and stuff, blah, blah, blah. But overall, like, that's what the state felt did play, whatever, the biggest role in the conviction of Stephen Avery's guilt. So that's all we're going to discuss this episode, because like I said, lots of information. And next week we're going to look at kind of the flip side of this about, the evidence that maybe says Stephen Avery did not commit this crime, and also kind of alternative theories. So I hope you enjoyed this. I know it's crazy, and I look forward to telling the rest of this story next week. Thank you for listening. As always, bye.